Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Kix Performance Basics. Today's presenter is Ben Satry. Ben has worked in Kix Level 2 support since 1989. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Ben.
Thank you, Joseph, and thanks to all of you out there for dialing in to the conference today. I see a bunch of names on the participant list that I recognize, and it's nice to see them all. Okay, Joseph, so if you would take us to the second slide, I guess. Okay, so today I want to clarify the meanings of some of the performance class monitoring fields that Kix puts out. I know there's some confusion out there about some of them. I sometimes get comments like, you know, they don't add up, and I want to hopefully clear up some of that confusion. And then sort of a separate piece is getting this information out of a dump. You know, sometimes your Kix region is either kind of hung up or things are so sluggish it might as well be hung, and there's nothing to do but pick a dump and cancel. It can be useful in looking at that dump to get this performance class monitoring information out of the tasks that are in flight at time of dump. Okay, Joseph, let's go to slide 3, please. All right, so just a bit of background here. Performance class monitoring data is what you get if you have MNPER and MN both set to yes and the fit, and it's just all information that Kix collects about each task, just hundreds of pieces of information from, you know, all areas, files or EJBs, basic stuff like start time, stop time. And we gather all this stuff, and at the end of the task, usually, is when we write it out to SMS so that then you can, process it with various tools. Let's go on to slide number 4, please. It's useful to go and look at all these fields. I give you the performance guide section where you can go there and something to search on in the information center. But if you do that, it lists all the performance class information in groups. This information is organized in groups, like DFH file for file stuff or DFH task for a lot of the timing fields. And if you just browse the list of all those groups, and perhaps pick out your favorite area and take a look at what all is out there, and it might be something that you could use someday. We are going to talk mostly about the DFH task and DFH kicks groups today. Okay, Joseph, let's go to slide number 5, please. The first field we're going to talk about is dispatch time. Now, on the title of this slide, I have two things, the USR DISP T. And that is the name that you will find in the Kix performance guide for this field. A lot of the products that process these SMS-1-2 records have a slightly different name. It can be confusing sometimes. Kix PA, for instance, would call this one dispatch. But I'm going to use the Kix official name. Also, this field is known as DFH Task 007. DFH Task is the group that this field is in, and 007 is the ID. And that, referring to the field by that name, will be useful, as you'll see later on in the pitch when we talk about going through the dump. Okay, so dispatch time is kind of the main thing. So when a task is has been given control by the Kix dispatcher, and off it goes executing instructions and doing who knows what, that is dispatch time. And the dispatch time starts when the dispatcher gives control to the task, and it ends when that task does something that suspends the task back to the Kix dispatcher. And so anything in there is all dispatch time, including if the task does something that causes the PCB to wait, it's still dispatch time. An example of that would be an SQL call. Goes off to DB2, perhaps it has to wait on an IRL LIM lock or something like that. That time waiting is dispatch time because control hasn't been given back to the Kix dispatcher. And so what all goes on in there is really everything, application code, Kix code, you know, resource managers, everything. Okay, let's go to slide 6, please. I've already talked a lot about this, but just another example of waiting while the dispatch clock is running would be loading a program. The IO happens, and it happens on the RO PCB, but while that IO is happening, the task is accruing dispatch time. One other thing, the bottom bullet I want to point out, so usually what we're used to is during file I.O. is that the task is actually suspended while the file I.O. is going on. And but it's possible, if you have everything, to do it at 632 for the since the thread safe, the file control is thread safe, the file I.O. can happen without the task suspending. Instead, the OpenTCB suspends, and all of that can be now dispatch time rather than suspend time. Okay, let's go to slide 7, please. Okay, so unfortunately, since dispatch time is such a big thing, we have some subsets that help break it down a little bit. And one of the key ones is the QR dispatch time. And that, of course, is the time that the task is dispatched on the QR TCB. For the most part, we try to keep, while running on the QR TCB, a well-behaved KIX application is mostly going to be executing instructions, or at least trying to execute instructions. And then the other, where you have those big, potentially long waits for various things while the task is dispatched, those would be on other things like it would show up in the T8 DISP-T in the case of the SQL call I was talking about. Or in the loading the program, that would be in the RO. There's an RO DISP-T, I believe. Okay, let's go to slide 8, please. Okay, so the opposite of dispatch time is suspend time. And so basically, it's every time the task is not dispatched by the KIX dispatcher, that's suspend time. And it's always nice to know that the task is always suspended. It's always either suspended or it's dispatched. It's never doing both, and it's never doing neither. And so that is one thing you can count on to add up. The susp time and the dispatch time added together is your total response time. It ought to be the exact same thing as if you take your stop time and subtract start time. So that is something you can hang your hat on. Okay, let's go to slide 9, please. Okay, now, this is a subset of suspend time, and this is kind of the key one I'm going to talk about today, and it's the wait for redispatch. You know, every time a task suspends for anything, file I.O., transient data lock, anything, there's a period of time where that thing it's waiting on is going on, and then there's a point when that's over. Like in the case of file I.O., the I.O. completes, the ECB, the task is waiting on, is posted, and so we're not waiting on file I.O. anymore. But that task still has to get dispatched again by the KIX dispatcher. And that part of suspend time where you're waiting for to be redispatched by the KIX dispatcher, that is disk wait, disk WTT. That's wait for redispatch. One of the, you know, the key things that you would have a lot of wait for redispatch time is on the single TCB modes like the QR. So with those, there's only one TCB, and so only one task at a time can be dispatched on the QR TCB. And so if you have a lot of tasks that are all ready to do their thing on the QR TCB, that would be a case where tasks would start to spend more and more time in wait for redispatch. Okay, Joseph, let's go to slide 10, please. All right, and there's even subsets of that subset. QR mod delay is wait for redispatch when you're waiting to be redispatched on the QR. Often, you know, the QR is a bottleneck, and so QR mod delay is a good thing to pay attention to. Usually most of wait for redispatch time is QR mod delay time. And then another neat one is the dispatcher change mode delay. So this is a subset of wait for redispatch when a task is changing modes, changing TCBs. When you do a change mode, your task gives up control of the TCB it's on, and then is made dispatchable on the TCB that it wants to go to. You know, it can't immediately run on that new TCB. The dispatcher has to wait its turn, especially if you're switching to the QR. Then that's where you could potentially have some time in that situation. Okay, let's go to slide number 11, please. Okay, so here's my little diagram on sort of some of the key points in the life of the task. So point number one, that's when the attach is tapped. That's when the task is attached. So, you know, some of the task is running along. Maybe there's a start. And so pretty much right about that time, the task is officially attached. But it doesn't run immediately. For instance, the task that did the start might be running. And so point number two is when the case dispatcher finally chooses this new task for the first time. And that time between one and two could potentially be long, like if there's a T-class or max task reason for why this task can't run right away after it's attached. So that's that. So point two, it gets dispatched and does its thing until it does something to suspend to the kick dispatcher. And then at point three, it is suspended. And at that point, the kick dispatcher could dispatch somebody else. And this point four, that's the key point for the wait for redispatch. The time between three and four is when whatever you're waiting on is really, you're waiting on it. But at four, that's over with, and the task is made dispatchable. And then all that time up until five is the wait for redispatch time. And then at five, you can consider five the same as two. It just goes back to a period of being dispatched, and then it's suspended, and dispatch is suspended all the way until the task is done. Okay, let's go to 12, please, Joseph. All right, I think I probably already talked about this. I will talk about DISP delay, D-S-P-D-E-L-A-Y. That's the official name for that period between 1 and 2. And a couple of subsets in there are the TCL delay, T-class delay, and MXP delay. Okay, let's go on to slide 13, please, Joseph. I'll just say at point 2, when the kick dispatcher dispatches the task, we note the time, and we also note the amount of CPU this TCB has used up to this point. And then when the task gives control back up to the kick dispatcher at point 3, we note the time, and we note the new amount of CPU that has been used up to this point for the TCB. And we can subtract those two and figure out exactly how much wall clock time was used. And that, of course, is added into dispatch time, and how much CPU time was used. And that gets added to the CPU field, like QRCPUT would be one for CPU used on the QR. Okay, let's go to slide number 14, please. And then this is the suspend thing, and I've already talked about this. Four is where it becomes dispatchable. The time between four and five is the wait for redispatch time. Okay, let's go to number 15. We're going to start going through a few examples, and I'm going to show a couple of charts that progress a task through from beginning to end, and you can see the values accumulating in the various performance monitoring fields. And I think it makes it easier to see and understand than just me talking about it. So I hope you like this. This task is going to do a couple of file control waits. It's very simple. It just goes through a couple of file control waits. So let's get started on it. Let's go to slide 16, please. So this first chunk here, I think these units, I'm just going to call them milliseconds, I believe. I call them later. But anyway, so this first chunk here, the task was attached at 0, and at 10 is when it finally gets going. So that whole chunk, that's suspend time. So the first chunk of the task is suspend time. And suspend time, and you see it's also, all 10 mils of it, is dispatch delay. Further breaking that down, you can see that a part of that 10 mils was T-class delay. So actually, at 3 mils, this task was actually made dispatchable. It got done with waiting for the T-class thing, and it was made dispatchable. And those last 7 mils of dispatch delay were waiting dispatchable for your first dispatch. So that dispatch delay field, that's just to do with this very first suspend of a task and nothing else. So that piece of that first waiting for dispatch, that's part of this delay and not the wait for redispatch that takes over after this first wait period. Okay, let's go to the next slide, please, number 17. So here the task got control by the fixed dispatcher. It ran on the QR TCB. It just took like 2 mils, and a piece of that, it looks like about a mil, was CPU time. So spent 2 mils doing whatever it did, and about half of that was actually using CPU time. Okay, so let's go to the slide 18, please. All right. So when it gave up control at 12 mils, it was for file I/O. And so the path extended all the way to 21. So it was nine mils. And all 9 mils of that suspend is SDIO wait time. But you can tell the actual waiting for the ECB to be posted, that part only took a millisecond. And then from like 13 all through 20, that's really wait for redispatch time. So this is sort of a key thing to understand is this whole 9 milliseconds is reported as SDIO wait time. If you didn't look at wait for redispatch, you might think that, wow, that's really bad for waiting for a file request. But in context with the dispatch wait time, you can see that almost all of those 9 milliseconds was waiting for redispatch. So this file I/O was slow because the QRTCV is busy, and this task had to spend a long time before the kick dispatcher gave it control again. Okay, so at 21, let's go to slide 19 now. So at 21, this task finally runs on the QR for a little bit, about 4 milliseconds, and a couple of milliseconds of CPU time. And then let's go ahead to slide 20, and this is just another same thing, another example of file I/O that this task is waiting in. And it's the same deal. Almost all of it is wait for redispatch time. Okay, let's go to slide 21. And he gets dispatched the last time, finishes up on the QR, and the task is done at 40 milliseconds. So let's go to slide 22 now, please, Joseph. Okay, so then this is the whole task, and this would be really great if this is what you got in the end and you can line things up. Let's see, I believe there's a problem with that sus time. That number one area should be all the way from 0 to 10 glued in. But it's easy to see, you know, what's included in what. The wait for redispatch time you can see coincides with the file I/O wait time. And the dispatch delay, that whole first chunk of suspend time is the dispatch delay. And it's really easy to see. But unfortunately, what you're left with is more like what's on slide 23. Let's go to that, please, Joseph. Because what KIX records, we don't have all that information about when all these different periods started and stopped. We just have the totals. So the total suspend time for this task was 31 mils. And the total dispatch time was 29 or something. And you sort of left to your imagination to sort of piece together what this really looked like. You have a little bit more than the total also. You also have that count. So like, have the three chunks of suspend time. That's what you'll get. You'll get, you know, the time, 31 milliseconds, and then the count is three. So you know this task had three chunks of suspend time, and then same for all of these fields. You get the time and then the count. And so if I'm looking at this, the first thing you see is, okay, so a big chunk of suspend time was waiting for first dispatch. And then the rest of suspend time is almost all used up by the wait for redispatch. So in that context, you would just know, okay, the file SCI wait time is just not important. What's important is all the wait for redispatch time this task had. Okay, let's go to slide 24. And I've removed those little bars so you have no sense of how big each individual chunk was. I just know for suspend time, say, that it was 31 mils and it's a count of three. You don't know if it was three pretty equally divided chunks or one chunk took about 29 mils and the other two chunks were real quick. You just have the time and the count. Okay, let's go to slide 25, please. Okay, we're going to go through one more of these, and this one's going to have some TCB switches in it. And I've chosen new fields to highlight. Hopefully it'll make these TCB switches. I'll show you how they work. Okay, so let's get started on slide 26, please. Okay, same thing here. 3 mils waiting for first dispatch. Now, not knowing, I didn't include T-class or max task, so I don't really know if those 3 milliseconds were waiting in those waits or if they're just all waiting dispatchable for those first 3 milliseconds. But if, you know, if I included those, then you could see. But anyway, so that's the first little bit of waiting for first dispatch. It finally gets going at 3 milliseconds. All right, let's go to slide 27, please. And runs a little bit on the QR, and it stops at like 4, and so we must have something coming up at 4. Let's go to slide 28, please. Okay, so this task is going to do an SQL call and has to switch to an L8. And, you know, this time waiting to be, you know, now waiting to run on the L8, that's suspend time while I'm waiting to run. And it's waiting for redispatch. That's why that millisecond shows up in disk WTT. And it's also that particular subset of wait for redispatch at the bottom, dispatch or change mode delay, because I'm waiting for redispatch on a new TCB. Okay? So at 5 milliseconds, then I must get that TCB. I will say that when you switch to an L8, say, you know, the L8 is private to a task. You know, it's a task's own personal TCB to do stuff on. And so the wait for redispatch on those is really pretty short, typically. Maybe the initial one, if we're having to create a TCB for you, it might be a little bit more. But generally, the TCB just has to wake up. You know, we post it, it wakes up, and then the dispatcher immediately gives the task to it. So the wait for redispatch when going to an L8 or a J8 would typically be short. Okay, so let's go to slide 29. And then here, it is dispatched for 10 mils doing stuff, doing that SQL call. And then if it's a thread-safe program, when it comes back from that SQL call, it will stay dispatched on the L8 and do whatever it does until it does something to suspend to the TIX dispatcher. And so you'll notice here that the CPU T, the key 8 CPU time, you know, that's really pretty small. So, you know, very possibly the time over in DB2 may be weighted on an IRLM lock, or you don't know. You don't know what the application, at least I don't know, what the application did that might have caused that LATCB to wait on something, it might have done some NVS API stuff or something. But anyway, in that dispatch, not a whole lot of CPU used during that. I don't know if I have an opportunity to say this later, so I'm going to take it now. You know, the CPU to dispatch ratio, a lot of people pay attention to, and you can get it in the statistics, but you can also get it with this monitoring information. And what makes sense to when you're doing that is to use the QR dispatch time and the QR CPU time, because that's the QR is where a well-behaved TIX application is doing stuff. It's mostly all executing instructions or trying to execute instructions. And so that CPU to dispatch ratio is meaningful for the QR, whereas it's not really, it's meaningful for the QR as sort of a measure of the performance that this TIX region is getting. And the other, if you take dispatch time and CPU time in general, it's not really meaningful for that purpose, because the TCB can wait on purpose rather than simply not getting the CPU when it wants it to. Okay, let's go to slide 30, please. All right, so here the task has done something, let's say a non-thread safe command, so we have to switch to the QR to do it. And in this blue, the bright blue here, this is suspend time. So the task right there at 15 wants to go to the QR, is made dispatchable immediately, but it took 3 milliseconds before he was able to get the QR and run. Okay, let's go to slide 31, please. And there's a little bit of time on the QR. And let's go to slide 32. And I believe he's going to do, I'm going to call it another SQL call. So I have to switch back to the L8. So another little piece of suspend time, which is also a little piece of dispatch wait time and a little piece of dispatch or change mode delay time. And go to slide 33. And there he goes again. This time it looks like he used a lot more CPU. Perhaps he didn't get stuck on an IRLM lock or whatever. So a big chunk of dispatch time for the task. And then let's go to slide 34. So he needs to switch to the QR to finish up, And then here, as all my examples are showing, a good chunk of time simply waiting, suspended, waiting for redispatch on the QR. So you notice QR mod delay is always big. Okay, and then let's go to slide 35. And then this task is finished up. So once again, all of this nice data all lined up gets smushed to the left, and you're left with the totals on slide 36, please. So, like before, I look at, if I'm wanting to care about, all right, why is the response time what it is? First of all, I'm going to get a feel for suspend time and dispatch time. Those are my top two rows here, and you know the task is always suspended. You know, it's one or the other. So those two ought to add up exactly to my 40 milliseconds. And so I can see, okay, so dispatch time was a bunch. And it's also helpful to know what's normal, of course. But let's say that's normal. And so the suspend time, so it had 13 mils suspended. And I'm going to first look to see, okay, I know a piece of that suspend time is disk delay, which I don't have here. So you would need to notice that because maybe it spent all 13 milliseconds on a T-class wait. So what piece of suspend time is wait for first dispatch? And then for the rest of suspend time, what piece of that is disk wait time? And on these tasks here, almost all of the suspend time is either that wait for first dispatch or wait for redispatch. And then once you know that, it doesn't even matter what it was suspended on. It's the wait for redispatch that matters. Okay, let's go to slide 37. So we're done with that part, and now I'm going to show you how to get the same information out of a dump. Now, you know, this is not at all a replacement for your tools that you use to get the historical data and the monitoring data on these tasks. That's a whole lot easier and more useful than digging out of a dump. But sometimes, that's all you have. Like, for instance, sometimes, you know, like the tasks that are in flight in a dump are, you know, there we probably haven't written out their SMS records yet because that happens when the task ends usually. You know, maybe one of those tasks was the problem task doing, you know, a loop of SQL calls or something, but you couldn't see that by post-processing the SMS 110 data. So sometimes if there's nothing to do but take a dump and cancel kicks, you have a need to see, you know, how many SQL calls a task did that was in flight, or how many file control things, or just when a task started. And so you can do that. I want to put a plug in for the kind of dump you might take in such a situation. Well, you probably couldn't even do a CEMTP snap unless you maybe had a CEMT already going. But it's much better to take a console dump of kicks in a situation like that because, you know, it doesn't change what kicks is doing. You know, the taking of the dump doesn't change what kicks is doing. It's much more useful. Okay, so let's go to slide 38. Sorry about that. I believe my D's are supposed to be circled on the left. But anyway, this is just a quick aside in the dispatcher summary of the dump. If you have a lot of tasks waiting on redispatch, this is what it looks like. That column, the D stands for dispatchable, and then on the right, the QR that says these guys are dispatchable on the QR. So at the time this dump was taken, all these tasks were accruing wait for redispatch time, although I suppose it could be wait for first dispatch, too. You couldn't tell from that. Okay, so I wanted you to see that. So let's go to slide 39, and now we'll get into the monitoring domain. You see the verb X with MN equals 3. And so if you have performance class monitoring active, which you can see scrolling down maybe a screen or two to see whether it's active or not, then you're good for what we're getting ready to do. So let's go on to slide 40, please. So find on the word TMA, and you'll get a hit in something like that. And this is a control block where we accumulate all of the performance class information about what a task does as it goes about its business. And then when the task is done, or for some other reason we put out that information, we will take all the information from the TMA and perhaps filter it out by your MCT directions, excluding this or that, and build this SMS record that goes out eventually to SMS anyway, so here we are on the PMA, and you can see the TRAN ID and the task number. So let's go to slide 41, please. And, you know, it's usually helpful to you scroll down until you get to the transactions that you know, your transactions. Yeah, when I'm doing this, I don't really know your transactions, but I'll often, like, go on down to where the task numbers get bigger. So, like, CD11 in this example might be some long-running thing that, you know, is going to have huge numbers, huge dispatch times, huge dispatch counts. It's not going to mean much to me. And maybe EF23 and everybody below here are typical KIX tasks that are supposed to be really short. You know, and sort of in my made-up scenario here, I'm going to go try to see, like, I'm going to, let's say that I know that a lot of tasks are dispatchable on the QR, and I'm wondering, okay, so maybe I just have a flood of work, twice as many transactions as normal, and that's why the QR is so busy. Or maybe I don't have a flood of work, same sort of rate of work arrival, but, you know, these tasks are all either using twice as much QR time as usual, or maybe they're not. Maybe there's just one task who is using way more QR time than usual. In this example, I'm kind of looking to see if I can find some tasks that might have been doing way more work than usual. Often the lowest task number, oh, shoot, that's not the lowest task number. I think I might have done that wrong. EF23, let's say that's the lowest task number. That's the first one that I'm going to concentrate on. And I'm just going to take a look at some of those fields. I'd like to know how much dispatch time has it had? What is its dispatch count? Is it the typical 10 or 12 that I know this task does usually? Or is it something, you know, big? How about the QR dispatch time? That's what I want to try to dig out of this task's TMA. So I note that token. That's the address of the TMA. And let's go to slide 42. And then here we are. It's a huge control block, you know, 500 or 600 hex bytes long, and it looks like that. Okay, so what we have to do is figure out the offset into this TMA that has the information that you want. And let's go to slide 43. To do this, you're going to need a supplementary data areas, or in KIX 3.2, that's nicely part of the information center. And you're going to need to know the group name and ID number that we talked about earlier for the field that you want. Let's go to slide 44, please. Now, this is a little aside back earlier in the monitoring output here, away from a TMA. Just one place you could go to get this group name and ID number. And find on dictionary, and you get dictionary, and you get something like this. So, like the start here I have, that's a field, that's in the DFH KIX group, and you can see that it is DFH KIX and 005. In the performance guide, you can also see that the start field is DFH KIX and 005. The offset here, by the way, it doesn't help us in the TMA. That's the offset, you know, in the actual SMF performance class record for this task. Okay, so let's go to slide 45, and I just scrolled down a little bit, and then here's some of the more interesting fields that we're going to want to go after in this TMA, and so I want to see DFH task 7, and that's just straight dispatch time, and DFH task 255, that's QR dispatch time. So let's go to slide 46. So what you need to do is search in your supplementary data areas or information center for this name that's fashioned from the group name and the ID number. And it is exactly TMA underscore, whatever the group name is, underscore the ID number. So in our case, you would search on TMA underscore DFH task underscore 007. And it'll take you right to the TMA, and I can see that that field is at offset 68 Charlie into the TMA. All right, let's go to slide 47, please. All right, so there it is. In KIX 3.2 and beyond, it will be a 12-byte field. The first 8 bytes is the time piece. And then there's a 1-byte flag. And then the last 3 bytes is the count. To use that, you need to convert it to seconds. And I tell here how to do that. You'll take the time piece, the 8 bytes of the time piece, and lop off the bottom 2 bytes and convert to decimal, and multiply by 0.00016 microseconds. And the answer is the number of seconds of, and in this case, dispatch time, that this task has accrued so far. I think I say this later, but I'm going to say it now. You know, kind of a quick way of sort of approximating the time is just to take the first word of the time. So in this case, the 1729, and that's approximately the number of seconds. So about hex 1729 seconds would work out to be pretty close to the 6,218 seconds. So if you have nothing in that first word of the time, you know that's a sub-second time field. Okay, let's go to 548, please. Okay, and then in that last word, the last three bytes of the last word, that's the count. So that's a huge count that this task has done. If this task is supposed to be a short-running thing, then this task has gone haywire. For some reason, he has, 16 million individual dispatches and also 16 million individual. But we don't really know that this task has had 16 million. It could be 16 million more than that. It's possible to wrap in that three byte count field. The same is true for the time. That's one of the reasons it has increased to 8 bytes. The time field versus in the prior releases of Kix is because that time could wrap too, but effectively it can't. It can't now that it's 8 bytes long. Okay, so let's go to slide 49, please. All right, let's see. Yes, the QR dispatch time, we wanted to go to that, and if we did the search on TMA _task_255, we'd see that 12 bytes of information is at 6 Baker Charlie. So the same thing, you could figure out how much time that is, and you can see the count. One thing, like here, if you notice the count in this one, it's FOX6909E, I guess. And you can see that's most of the dispatch count, which was a little bit more, FOX6 Baker. So just from that, you know that most of the 16 million dispatches were 16 million dispatches on the QR. Okay, let's go to 550, please. All right, this is a reality of this. This is suspend time, also at 6A4. And this time piece, those 8 bytes, are just, way big. And it's because this clock is running. This task at time of dump was suspended. And that flag byte, in the last word, the 80, that's what will tell you it's suspended. And so you can't really figure out the suspend time so easily. So that's a task is it's either going to be dispatched or suspended. So one of those fields is going to look like that. So don't be thrown off by that. Okay, let's go to 551. It is possible to go backwards. Like all the timing fields are sort of together in the same section of the TMA, and so you might, as you get used to this, you might notice a big field down below, and you wonder what that is. Like this one here at 788, it's got Charlie 5-able, approximately hex Charlie 5-able seconds, and a huge count. I wonder what that is. And so you could say, all right, this is at offset 788. So just go to the supplementary data areas, which you're probably already at some other place, and scroll down to that offset 788, and you can see that this is DFH task 249. And then you can go look that up. Let's go to slide 52, please. In the performance guide, you can go to DFH task and see that 249 is QR mod delay. So this task, it used many, many, many seconds of QR dispatch time, during which no other task could be using the QR. And it also itself had to wait to be redispatched on the QR. So anyway, if your problem in this dump was, if that task that we found it was supposed to be short-lived, and then you can see that, no wonder everybody was waiting on the QR. This task had it for, hundreds of seconds. And then you could investigate further. You might say to yourself, I wonder how many SQL calls this task did. And then you could do the same technique if you're familiar with those groups. That's in DFH data. And you could go look at DFH data and see that the SQL count is, and get the ID number, and then search in the TMA, search in the supplementary data areas to find out the offset in the TMA that keeps that count, and then you can go see what it was and debug a little bit that way. Okay, let's go to slide 53, please. I just wanted you to see a pre-Kix 3.2 TMA, and here off at 5 Charlie Charlie is a time field, and it's 8 bytes long now and not 12 bytes long. And so the last word is the same. It's a flag byte and then the 3-byte count. So this task has hex 69 individual somethings. Let's call it dispatches. And this might be dispatch time. And then the count looks like that. This is kind of based off the middle 4 bytes of an 8-byte store clock. And so the way you convert this is you just take that whole first word time piece, and there's no lopping off to do. You just take the whole thing, multiply by 16 microseconds, and that gives you the time. And then the trick for just sort of eyeballing an approximate time, you take the top 2 bytes. So this has 4. So it's about 4.5 seconds of dispatch time for this task. Okay, let's go to slide 54. And we're done. So I hope that this has been useful to you, that you've gotten a tidbit out of it, something about wait for redispatch and how that's sort of important to get straight when you're trying to figure out why a task was suspended so long. You need to see off the bat, was it because of wait for redispatch? If your wait for redispatch time is, you know, essentially nothing, then you can take at face value all of the other subsets of suspend time, you know, like file IO wait time or NQ delay time. If your wait for redispatch coupled with first dispatch delay is pretty much all of suspend time, then you don't need to look any further. It doesn't matter what it says for file IO wait time or NQ delay time. So don't forget wait for redispatch when you're trying to figure out why a task was suspended so long. And then someday it will be useful to you knowing how to get some of those fields out of a dump. If you just have a dump and that before you cancel them, and hopefully that'll come in handy someday. Okay, let's see. Let's go to slide 55, please. Okay. All right, this chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for web school products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcast and conference information. You can visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online, and the My Notifications link on all product support pages let you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. All right, so I'm done with that, with this part. Joseph, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Dan, for a great presentation. At this point, Sarah, we would like to open the line for questions.
We'll hear from Paul Masters.
Yes, hello, Dan. Haven't heard from you in a while. You mentioned on the OTE TCB, you said that most of the weight was like file control and such would be added to it. It's not a separate weight. Are there anything that does have extra suspend times on an OTE?
Let's see if I understand. So the file I/O, you know, Kix 3.2, if you have LFR files and the right level of MVS, mentioned that the file I/O would be part of dispatch time on the OTE. And you want to know if there's examples where a task running on an open PCB actually suspends to the Kix dispatcher?
Well, it would show suspend time because it sounded like everything is considered, you know, running on that TCB. Whereas
yes.
On the QR, you suspend and you're not suspended and such.
Yes. Right, because that's the beauty of the open PCB is that it's your own and you don't have to really give up control to the Kix dispatcher. But I think I know an example of one. I'm pretty sure that you still get MQ, I don't know if it's the task switch weights, the get. Like if you're, I believe if you're doing a get, which could be potentially a long time, I'm pretty sure that they choose to suspend the task. So I think that's an example of where a task would suspend while on TCB. But you won't see much of that, because there's really no need to suspend. Because you're not blocking anybody if your TCB gets weighted for some reason.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Sarah. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.